Thanks for joining us in Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm Joanne Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at.
This is the big presidential election.
Early voting for the general election kicks off today. What you need to know. New reporting details a lack of access to green spaces in Chicago's Latino communities, and it has big consequences.
Every item has an owner.
And we tell you how a passion for collecting led to an exciting business venture. And now to some of today's top stories. A Chicago police officer and a 16-year-old boy are both hospitalized tonight following a shooting earlier today. The shooting took place on the 5600 block of South Shields Avenue in the city's Englewood neighborhood. Police Superintendent Larry Snelling says the shooting happened when officers were recovering a gun from the teen, which was held in his waistband. The gun discharged and shot the teen in the groin. Snelling says that same bullet is believed to have also struck the officer in the leg. The superintendent says the officer is in good condition and described the boy's condition as stable. And as we mentioned, early voting for the November general election is officially underway. Chicago residents can vote at Superside at 191 North Clark or on the sixth floor of the Chicago Board of Elections at 69 West Washington. Any voter in Chicago can vote at any early voting site, no matter where they live in the city. But if you're waiting for a site closer to you, early voting in all 50 wards begins October 21st at 9 a.m. Visit our website for more details and a full list of hours. And President Joe Biden signs an executive order aimed at tackling modified guns. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, alongside Chicago advocates, spoke at a news conference this morning in support of the action. The executive order will target increasing threats from 3D printed firearms and machine gun conversion devices while working to improve active shooting drills at schools.
The order also establishes a new federal task force to develop a plan to address the threat posed by machine gun conversion devices and 3D printed guns within 90 days. So it's not just a matter of protecting the kids from the shooter drills and the trauma associated with that. It's addressing a new generation of weapons.
Up next, a rundown of what you need to know as we head into election season. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
It's time to get to the polls, Chicago. We are 33 days away from the election, and early voting kicked off today at two downtown locations. Election officials are urging voters to have a voting plan. Here to talk more about what you should know is Giovanna Carreo, who handles Hispanic outreach for the Chicago Board of Elections. Thank you, Giovanna, for making time. We know that the polls opened bright and early at 9 a.m., I assume that your day was busy. How has the day been for you?
It's been a busy, busy day, but we're excited that early voting has now opened.
And as I mentioned, you handle the Hispanic outreach for the Chicago Board of Elections. Tell me a little bit about what that entails.
Yeah, so it, you know, our purpose is to make voting accessible for everyone, including the Hispanic and Latino community, to making sure that they feel comfortable on election day and that they're informed of their rights and all of the options that there are.
And I know we talk about this often, but what would you say are some of the biggest challenges Latinos face when it comes to the voting process? Are you seeing that there's more Latinos now heading to the polls, or what has that work like been like for you?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we do see that the Latino majority wards see a lower voting participation, at least in comparison to other parts of the city, specifically the north side of the city. But we are working hard at the board to make sure that voting is accessible. As for language, bilingual poll workers, and just meeting voters where they are. You know, meeting them at different events throughout the entire city to let them know that, hey, we're here, your vote matters, and it's very easy to vote.
And talk to me about those events. Those are throughout the city, right? What would you say is the purpose for these events?
Yeah, so we work with community organizations, elected officials throughout the entirety of the city to table, host voting demonstrations, and just informational sessions for so voters know what to expect on election day. You know, we talk a lot about language access, the importance of having someone on election day who looks like the voters, who speaks like the voters. That way they go in that day knowing that they're going to be taken care of.
And to talk about that, you mentioned that part of your job is making sure that everyone is in order. And how many bilingual election judges do you have now? You were telling me before this conversation that you were making sure that you have to make sure that they're at the right spot. Tell me about that.
Correct. So for Election Day, we try to hire election poll workers to cover 560 precincts with majority Spanish speakers. As of now, we have a little over 500 poll workers, but we're working hard to get all the slots filled in. So if anyone watching tonight is interested in being a poll worker, especially those that are bilingual, please go on our website and apply.
How many bilingual judges did you say you have?
We have about 515.
515. That's a large amount, but you still...
Yes, we want to fill in the vacancies, but also have backups because inevitably things happen. We might see a wave of resignations as we do, but we want to be prepared for all scenarios.
And what would you say you're expecting to see this election cycle? How should voters prepare?
Yeah, so fortunately, we always see at least a 70% participation in general presidential elections. But for that reason, because you never know what's going to happen on election day, lines might be very long, things come up with work and school, kids. So we have a few different options. We have vote by mail and also early voting. So we want voters to have a plan to know, you know, if this can't work out, what are my other options? But also, it is a pretty long ballot this time around. you know, we have a variety of offices, including judges' retention and also statewide referenda.
And I wanted to talk to you about that because we know it's not at what's not only at stake is nationally, but we can see voters. What can voters expect to see at the ballot when it comes to local elections? Because it can be quite confusing. As you mentioned, it can be quite long.
Yes. So the first three objects that the voters are going to vote on are going to be three statewide referenda. That's the first thing on the top of the ballot. And other voters in the city of Chicago are going to see local referenda, depending on the ward that they live in. But all of those voters that want to be prepared, that want to go in, just vote and leave, they're able to find a sample ballot. They're able to see what their ballot is going to look like. They can print it out. They can study it. And that's available on our website, and that's available in Spanish as well.
Would you say those events that are thrown throughout the city, this is what also you guys help with?
Yes. We want to inform voters as much as possible. We also hold voter demonstrations. During election day, you are able to vote on paper and on touchscreen, but during early voting, you can only vote on a touchscreen, so which can be a little intimidating. So at these events, we will take our equipment out there and allow voters the opportunity to actually vote using a demo ballot.
Oh, wow. And what would you say for first time, what do first time voters need to know to register for the first time?
Yes. So our deadline to register on paper at our office for voting is going to be October 8th. To do it online, the deadline is October 20th, but you can still register during the early voting period and on election day. For all of those voters that are already registered, but maybe they haven't heard from our office, they haven't received any mail, we do encourage you to go online or to reach out to our office to make sure that your registration is active.
And why do you advocate for early voting?
You know, you just never know what's going to happen on election day. We do expect long lines, you know. You just never know. Maybe your car breaks down, family emergencies, anything. So knowing that you have a little over a month to actually go in and vote is essential, and we, you know, we just want everyone to have a plan so they can actually vote this election.
And you seem really passionate about this work.
Yes, of course. We, you know, there's a variety of offices, very important offices, a lot that are going to impact voters directly and very soon. So we want to make sure that they are prepared to what those offices are, what those statewide questions are. And we want to see voters come out. Unfortunately, in the past few elections, we have seen very low voter participation, but we are hoping that this is going to be very different.
That it continues to grow.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Giovanna, for all those updates.
Thank you.
And we're back with more right after this. Chicago is a city known for its parks, but not everyone has easy access to green spaces. This is especially true for predominantly Latino neighborhoods. Data from the Trust for Public Lands tells us that Latino communities have 41% less access than the average Chicagoan. A collaboration between Borderless magazine, Cicero Independiente, and Inside Climate News details the issue in a series of new reports. Joining us to explain more are Leslie Hurtado of Cicero Independiente, Aidali Campa of Borderless Magazine, and Philip Boda, a public health professor at University of Illinois Chicago. Thank you all for joining us. So let's dive into this work. Leslie, I want to go with you. Your reporting focused on a new park being built in Cicero that's caused quite a local controversy. Tell me what used to be there and what you found alarming as Ability Park is set to be built there.
Yes, so the site was Blakesley Factory, so it's been there since the early 20th century. So it's been there for many years, and it's become like different things, different industries, like a factory for door manufacturing. Even the town uses it for construction projects. So there is a lot of materials that were found, like abandoned vehicles and just like remnants from the site that were just left, like tree trunks everywhere. And one of the findings from consultants from 2009 to 2011, they found that there were a lot of hazardous contaminants like lead and arsenic, among other contaminants, including the groundwater, like vinyl chloride, which is like a gas that is used for plastic production. So a lot of different things that were found on the site that were hazardous to people's health.
And Philip, you expressed concerns over the cleanup of Ability Park. You know, what's the issue with the way the site is being cleaned up? We know that the town is following protocol, but is there a safer approach to this?
Right. Thanks, Joanna. I mean, I'm so proud to be here, and I want to recognize the idea that they are following the law. And so I think the big issue here is not the site itself, is that the cleanup procedure is detailed by the legislation already, and the community is not happy with it.
And Aidali, I want to go to you. You reported on environmental justice advocacy in Brighton Park, which is now the park's district's headquarters. Can you tell us about the efforts it took to bring a 17-acre park to the neighborhood? It was known as a park desert.
Yeah, it was known as a park desert for a few years, thanks to a lot of advocacy and media attention that the community got. And what resulted of that was a renovated park, of the only park that they had there. But then years later, the Chicago Park District decided that they wanted to be based out of a community that was lacking in these green spaces, and so they were headquartered out of there now since last year.
What would you say you found like the most interesting about this whole like procedure?
I think it was really interesting that it took that much work from the community to get that attention. It was a lot of, it seems like, going to meetings, campaigning, knocking on doors. So it really did take a years-long effort to get that to happen.
And Leslie, going back to Ability Park, as mentioned, it's being built on a site with hazardous material underground. What would you say are some potential risk factors that you found?
So arsenic was above residential levels, and instead of removing arsenic from the site, they're going to average arsenic. So they're not going to do a complete removal, and that's extremely toxic. Children can ingest that, inhale it.
What would that look like if you had to describe it to someone?
It's like an invisible particle that's underneath the soil, and it leads to like cancer, like lung cancer and other defects. So it's definitely a concern for residents, for children who will be playing in the park, who are already back at school, and it's going to be built next year. Arsenic is definitely a concern, as well as lead. Even though the EPA says that there can be a low percentage of lead, just the risk of exposure is prevalent in this site, even the groundwater.
And Philip, how does something like this happen?
The reality is, you know, our laws haven't really changed for a long while, and the violations to those laws, those permitting regulations, don't have dire consequences for the industries that pollute. And so they can continually, as millionaire and billionaire industries, pollute, get a fine, and then just pay it, pennies on the dollar, because they can take everyone to court, and, you know, that's taxpayer dollars every single time. So again, the reality is we need to change the legislation. And it has already been tried two separate times for zoning around environmental justice, thinking about those areas. And it has failed twice to think about cumulative burdens that mostly plague Black and brown communities.
And talking about that, and why is there such a disparity in green spaces in Black and brown communities compared to white neighborhoods? I know that you've done a lot of data work on this.
Yeah, so we can see very clearly that Chicago is segregated. And along those lines, it's segregated by economics. And so working class people tend to be closer to where they work. And so when we think about the history, that's great. You know, the past is set in stone. But from now on, our children need fresh air. And it's not, it shouldn't be a function of where you live, especially when the new Illinois Constitution said that everyone should have fair and distributed exposure to environmental hazards.
What are your thoughts? What are you saying?
I think what your story told us is that, yes, while green spaces matter and parks matter, how we go about it is very important. So what is already there? What is it surrounding? Who lives around? And so those considerations are really important to have, other than let's just plant more trees.
Yeah, and I want to talk about Little Village because your work also highlights work done in Little Village, La Vita, like Brighton Park, is a heat island. Can you explain what that is and how that happens in a city like ours?
Yeah, in certain parts of Chicago, large parts of Chicago are just literally hotter than other parts of the city, and this is due to just the built-up of a lot of buildings, concrete, and lack of green spaces and trees. And so what happens is places that used to be redlined were not invested as much when it comes to green spaces and trees. And so we're still seeing those communities trying to catch up so that those temperatures can come down. But Brighton Park and Little Village and a lot of other communities in the Southwest side are still have a long way to go.
And what was your process like trying to talk to people? Were they all, did they know about this? What was that the journey like?
Unfortunately, when we were doing engagement for the story, a lot of residents were shocked when we told them about the plans for the park, because they live very close to the park, like a block away, and they were not informed. The only way that this project was told to the public was through a newspaper called Lawndale News, and unfortunately the community does not read that paper. And then the town board meetings, they're held very early. It's impossible for residents to come. They're at work. So there's just no communication between officials and the community.
Would you say that people, when you spoke with them, that they did care about what was happening?
They were concerned about the contaminants. When we told them what we found, they did not feel safe to send their kids to go play there. They definitely want to talk to officials in the future and ask for new park features and more safety features as well. The residents were not informed about this process.
And you said this is being built next year?
Yes.
Starting next year. Philip, can people do anything about it? Or is it kind of set in stone?
I would say the best thing that they can do is organize, right? Getting awareness out there and getting it out legibly and accurately. Much of what we find is that what is told, right, to communities is not legible to communities. And there is also no stipulation in the law that it has to be.
And you talked about policy change. How can people get involved?
Right, so talk to your political officials about the regulations where industry is allowed to keep their permits after they have 10 violations. I don't know any other profession that would allow to be violated so much at a city and a regional level and still be employed and still working.
Is there some frustrations that you have?
Oh, yeah. I think about the children, right? I work with the community members, particularly the Southwest Environmental Alliance. And it's their children, it's their brothers, sisters, mothers, cousins. And so if you can't recognize that it's the children inhaling this air while permits are being negotiated, you're putting profit over people.
And a lot of people might hear this story and say, so what? You know, you can just travel to another park, another area, another neighborhood. Aidali, why is it important for people to have access to these parks?
Yeah, it's important for everyone to have access to parks because these are community hubs. These are places where you get to strengthen community ties. You get to know your neighbor a little bit better. You get to be more physically active. And so if you have to drive farther away to do that, that's another barrier. And so it literally makes or breaks the community when it comes to making them healthier and more prosperous.
Well, thank you, everybody, for your input and great work.
Thank you so much.
Up next, finding something new and something old. We explain right after this. Filled with hidden gems. As the city celebrates Hispanic Heritage Month, we visited an antique shop in Pilsen, taking customers back in time.
If you're walking down 18th Street, it's hard to pass this storefront without wondering what's inside. As soon as you step in, you realize it's just about everything.
People found it like magical, and as soon as people, they just get in, the scents start on, smelling the, you know, the bakery and touching the items and go all around the store.
Francisco Orozco is the owner of El Anticuario, retro, weird stuff, cool junk. He says his passion for collecting began when he was just a kid in Mexico.
I like to swim, and I found a little piece of metal under the water, and since then, it was a very interesting piece. And since then, I mean, I started.
Quirky vintage items, gadgets, and a collection of Latin American books, statues, and artifacts are found throughout the antique shop.
This is the best part of the store because we tried to find the rarest books in whole Chicago.
And if you hang around long enough, it'll start to feel like you've entered a whole other world.
This is very representative of our culture, the bad and the good. And you can see in the back, there is six bottles, originals.
Okay.
It's like a gift from a person. God made a miracle and they offer to the Lord. And this is in a very antique and old tradition.
Orozco opened the shop 6 years ago and runs it with his wife Alex and his daughter Gibby.
We used to call it hoarding, because it very much is hoarding. Their house, oh my gosh, growing up, we would go to school, and just what he does here, he would do at home. So we'd come home, all the furniture rearranged.
Gibby says the more unusual the discovery, the better it is.
This one right here, it's a doctor trying to keep death away from taking the woman. So many people have asked about this one, and so many people have offered, but we're like, no, it's just a rare find.
Orozco says the shop is a representation of his roots. He wants it to be a space to celebrate his culture and love for all things strange.
And I always say to the people that this is not a place, it's more like a concept.
Everything in the store is intentionally curated.
Nothing here is new. I mean, everything is, we're trying to bring.
But like you said, everything that you have here has a story.
Right, right. And I believe every item has, I don't know how to say it, but it's like a calling, a person is what I'm being found. So every item has an owner.
Gibby credits her parents for the success of the antique shop in the community.
It's not just another store to them. It's like them opening their home.
And yeah, I mean, they can come here and have an experience.
And it's hard to leave without wanting to buy something. The family recently opened a second location across the street. There you can find furniture, a larger collection of paintings, and decor. And if you happen to visit on the weekend, Francisco's wife sells baked goods, and I heard they're very good. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Stay connected with our newsroom and what we're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And check out our website for stories you may have missed, like our roundup of activities to do outside this weekend, especially since it's getting into that pumpkin season. And that's at WTTW.com/news. And join us tomorrow night for the weekend review at 5:30 and 10. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay safe and healthy. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.